Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
As I've been living more deeply the experience of having written Liberating Jesus with Jesus, I have arrived at some remarkable insights. I've come to realize that the teachings of Jesus do not really teach us anything. Instead, what they do is to help us remember who and what we are. So it turns out that applying those teachings is amazingly easy, and it is a joyous experience. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is Betsy Otter Thompson. As part of our walk with Jesus, and we're not talking about the religious Jesus, but humanity's greatest teacher, I've been seeking out and sharing with you some alternative teachings that lead us to the same place. As Jesus himself said, whoever is not against us is for us. And it turns out that this process of remembering who we truly are can be approached from a number of directions. Betsy Otter Thompson's lovely little book, Love Human, approaches the truth in a way that perhaps you yourself will find particularly pleasing. So I'm glad she's here. Welcome, Betsy.
Oh, thank you so much, Roberta. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, Betsy's book is really short. If your attention span is short, this is a great place for you to start. Betsy's book touches on the same things that Liberating Jesus touches on, that T.J. Woodward's wonderful book, Conscious Being, touches on. It's the same genre of book, but the thing is, since it does it differently, it may just click some things with you that you have trouble clicking with. This process of unlearning the things we've always thought were true so we can get back to the eternal truths that are in all of us, this process isn't as easy to start as it should be. Once you get going, though, I'll have to tell you, it's the most natural thing in the world. But Betsy, tell us a little bit about your history. You've always been somewhat psychic, right?
Yes, I have, and I discovered that gift when I was very young, at 4 years old. My mother was always talking about her grandmother, who she loved very much, and she was always telling me how much I looked like her. And since I was having trouble getting along with my mother even at four, I thought the fact that I looked like somebody she loved was a definite asset.
Yes.
So I started talking to her, and the conversations were wonderful, and at four, however, I assumed that everybody could do
yes.
what I could do.
Yes.
And so I told my sister what I was doing, and she went ballistic.
Yeah. When I had my first extraordinary experience, I was eight, and I was even then kind of aware that you just don't talk about this. But I think when you're four, the world seems open to you. You think everything is the same for everybody, and So that made you decide not to do it anymore?
Well, yes, because I was terrified. You know, she teased me unmercifully about it for weeks, and I was terrified she would tell others what I was doing and they would react as she had normally. I mean, naturally, that was my feeling. And so I didn't want to lose the friendship of my sister, and I didn't want to be thought of as weird, and so I stopped
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, so you went on then and lived a life as we all do and sort of forgot about that. But when did your being psychic come back into your life?
Well, I was in California and I was having a hard time. I almost became homeless, and I did some evaluation of my life and realized that my choices hadn't worked too well for me. And getting to the point of almost being homeless is kind of a big wake-up call, I can tell
oh,
you
it is.
That.
Yes.
And so I decided that things couldn't get any worse, and why shouldn't I honor a talent that I had? And so I started using the talent again, and it was like an amazing miracle that happened, because about four weeks after that, I had a job in the entertainment business that I stayed working for the same man for the next 18 years until I was able to retire and write full time.
Oh, my goodness, what a happy story.
Yes.
So you had always known that you were somewhat psychic, but you just were putting it aside until you received what I've called in other situations the gift of divine desperation.
Yes, it was almost as if it was, you know, you're either going to honor this gift or you're out of here.
Yeah,
Because you come here, I mean, I believe we all come here for a specific purpose, and if we ignore that purpose, well, there's no purpose for being here.
Yes, that's true. Well, that's very wise. So, all right, did you start doing readings for people, or how did you use your psychic gifts at that time?
I just started asking questions and getting answers. I had no idea where it would go to, Roberta. I just decided to, before I got the job, I said a prayer one night. It didn't even sound like a prayer to me. I said, I want to use the gift. I want to share it. I'll write down all the answers. But, geez, I sure need a job to support me while I do it.
Yeah, right.
And 3 weeks later, I had the job. So it was as soon as I became my authentic self and said, you know, I know what I'm here for. I'm ready to do it. It was like the universe said, oh, if you're okay, you're ready. We're ready. And here we go.
One of the things that I wonder, and so just to finish that story, I'm so eager to talk about your book, but to finish that story, did you then start to channel, or what did you do after that with your gift?
I just started to ask questions and write answers. That's all I did. And then I realized that I could direct it more. I could turn it into something more organized. And so I was talking with a friend of mine, and she said, why don't you write a book about parenting? Because she had had trouble with her being a parent, and I'd had parental issues too. So I thought, well, that's a wonderful idea. And so that's how I started the first book, which was Love Parent.
Okay. And then these books then went on the market, and you started becoming a writer. You were still then obviously working with the band, right? That was, writing was still your night job.
I was working in an entertainment business. I was working at Castle Rock Entertainment. I was hired the second day they were in business.
Oh my goodness. That's wonderful.
Yes, and I stayed with my boss when he was promoted to Warner Brothers as president of Warner Brothers. And then I retired, and he has gone on to be the CEO of Disney. So it's he's still in the business, and I'm out of it doing my own business.
Isn't that a wonderful story?
Yeah.
So you attribute all of that to your opening yourself to doing what you had been called to do here,
yes,
rather than saying, I'm going to do it Betsy's way, which is the way we tend to live our lives until we wake up.
Yes, but, I mean, it was like, I really had that feeling that it was now or, you know, you'll just come back again and try again.
Yes, wow. Yeah. Had you done any research, or did you have any understanding of what's really going on before you started channeling?
Roberta, to tell you the truth, I still don't, because when people ask me how does it happen, I haven't the faintest idea. I only know that it's the same process that an artist goes through. I mean, where do their visions come from? And where do a musician's notes come from? I mean, if you ask them, what would they say? I haven't the foggiest.
Yeah, okay, well, that's an interesting point. I think that one of the things that I've always felt was that the fact that I spent so many decades doing afterlife research and putting it all together and making sense of it was important to my work. But what you're saying is probably absolutely right. If you are connected with spirit, you get the answers that spirit wants you to share with the world, and the rest doesn't really matter, does it?
No, and I think that it's the same process for a musician. I really do believe that they hear the notes
yes.
from a place that they don't understand where it's coming from, and an artist sees a vision. Where does that individual artist's vision come from? I mean, it's like a miracle, and it's the same miracle for you and me.
Yeah, and let me just orient people a bit about this, because I'm learning so much. This has been the year in my whole life, 2015 rather, that just ended, has been the year when I have learned more than I've ever learned in the whole rest of my life combined. So I'm still processing it. But one of the things that I think I want everyone to know is that, and that you can see this around you if you look around, there is a tremendous effort ongoing at the highest levels of the greater reality to quickly elevate the consciousness of the planet so that we will begin to develop spiritually much more than we ever have before. You see it, Betsy. I'm sure everyone listening sees bits of it. But because my first book in this genre came out in 2010, I was privileged to see the before picture. And when people were just not aware. A lot of people would come to lectures I'd give, and I was talking all over the country in 2011, 2012. People would come to my lectures, and they would have blank looks on their faces. They'd be puzzled. The questions they'd ask were really often clueless questions. And I almost despaired for the world that people had so little spiritual awareness and so little awareness of what was going on. But now I have to say, and I think the turning point was probably the end of 2012, when I talked before groups, different days, everybody has all their lights on. People are nodding, they're smiling. It's amazing how quickly it's happening. But Betsy, what you're doing and what T.J. Woodward is doing, what so many people are doing, is responding to the same call, which I guess I'm responding to. We all came in to be part of this elevation of the consciousness of the planet. We each, as you pointed out to me before we started speaking for public consumption, that we all have a little role to play.
Yeah, we all do. I think we volunteer for our role too. And of course. I think that the other people who are playing other roles have volunteered for their roles too. And I don't think any role is any less or more important. I think each one is perfect for the growth of the soul who's taken it.
Yes, it's perfect for our growth, and it's perfect for helping the world to grow. I've learned a little more about Liberating Jesus since it was published. I've always been on a need-to-know basis with my primary guide, because he knows I'll talk about anything I learn from him, and I do. And one thing I've learned from him was that there was a decision made I'm told it was the 70s, he says the 80s, that Jesus was going to write a definitive book. Now, I had come in to write Thomas's book. He wanted me to write about Jesus, but he volunteered me to write the master's book, and that's why we ended up channeling my Thomas about Thomas Jefferson's lifetime. So they could prove that I could channel. When that book was out, then I was accepted. And he says they've spent 20 years getting me ready to write Liberating Jesus. I had no idea. But it's the same kind of thing you're talking about, isn't it? You came in with a role, and your guides probably have been working on how this was all going to happen, what that role would be for the whole of your life.
That's right. And I think my soul probably knows too. But I think that, you know, part of the problem is that we judge one role as being more important than another. And I don't believe that. I think that every role is important. You know, it's as important as any other role. And I compare it all the time to the theater. You know, you go to the theater, you act in the theater, you play a role while you're on the stage, and then you leave the stage and you go back to the other life. And I think that our lives here are, we're on the stage of playing the role we volunteer to play, and everyone else on the stage, whether they're playing the hero, the heroine, or the scoundrel, have volunteered to act in that role too. And their role is just as holy as any other role.
Absolutely. I've been shown that it's a tapestry. Imagine a gigantic tapestry. Each person, each of you and me, and each person listening, we all have a stitch that we've agreed to put into that tapestry.
Right.
And in order to make it perfect, we've got to do our stitch.
Yeah,
our stitch is
that.
No bigger
I
than anybody
that.
Else's stitch.
I'm a knitter, so I love that one.
Yeah, it's just what we're here to do, and it's joyous.
And that's why there's a chapter in the book on and Love Herman on judgment, and why judgment isn't appropriate, because we have no idea the role that other people have volunteered to play. And just because we think it looks horrible or we have a judgment on it doesn't mean there is any in the reality of our lives, which is after we leave the illusion. There is no judgment on anything. There is only the role we come here to play. And each role, I believe, is taken by the soul who needs to experience that for whatever reason. And we don't know, because we don't know what they lived before now. We don't know what they're here to learn, why they came. We don't have any of that information. So judgment is not appropriate towards anyone else.
Yeah, that's one of the first things we need to get rid of, is the notion, judge not that you be not judged, is the way Jesus put it. And one of the greatest reasons to learn not to judge is the first thing that happens after we die is we have a life review and we're the judge. And if you think If you think that God would be tough on you, God doesn't judge us, but we judge ourselves, and we are tougher on ourselves than you can imagine, because we know what we meant to do when we got here, and we can see how we screwed it up. And until you're ready to forgive easily, you have a lot of trouble forgiving yourself, just as an aside. So you're absolutely right. Judgment has no place.
Yeah.
But it's important to remember, too, that while you may well have come in with a larger role to play in this elevation of the consciousness of the planet, you may have a stitch to put into that tapestry. We also came in with specific things to learn so we could continue to grow spiritually. And what seems to be the case is that we need to complete those lessons first. It's significant to me that this is happening in many people's lives. They're being called to do specific things when they're older than 50 or even older than 60. They've done the lessons they were supposed to do.
How about older than 70?
Well, dear, I'll be 70 next summer. So, yes, this to me is significant. Work on, if you want to play a part in this, and I hope you do, please work on the life lessons you have and get them out of the way. I gave my life to God in April of 2009, and I've been telling everybody, give your life to God, it's the most fun you can imagine. But that's very naive of me. When I gave my life to God, I was at a point in my life where I now look back and see there were a lot of things I had to sort of get through, and my kids needed to be emancipated, and there was a lot I had to do. I wasn't perfected by any means, but I wasn't the mess I had been when I first came in. So I had life left to give to God. Your primary role in your own life, as you just said, Betsy, is to learn the things you came here to learn for your own spiritual growth, which is very, very important. You are not less important than the elevation of the consciousness of the planet. You are as important and even more so. Because until each of us can elevate ourselves sufficiently, I'm going to read a sentence from Betsy's book. The peace you pray for begins with you. You are the creator of serenity on this planet. If world peace has not been achieved, it's not the fault of any other person, country, nationality, race, or God. That's true. That is something which is so core to our understanding of who and what we are that if there were no other reason I would want to interview you and get people to read your book, it's that sentence, Betsy. You are totally right.
Yes. It's not about, you know, we get distracted. We're very distracted by what's going on in the world, and we see outside of us. But each person is responsible for the peace they create in their own life. And there are many names I give to that distraction. You can call it ego, Satan, hell, Hades, whatever you want to call it. It's whatever keeps you away from realizing that we create our lives from the inside out, not the outside in. And therefore, it is up to us, each person individually, to create the peace around us that we want the world to have, because that's the only way it's going to come. It's never going to come from countries ending their abuse of their citizens or people or nations being cruel to other people being cruel outside of us. It comes as each of us individually finds the peace within, and that's the only way it's going to happen. So if it isn't happening in the world, forget about the world. Is it happening for you? That's the question you need to ask.
Jesus says once we learn to follow his teachings perfectly, and they're basically the same teachings you've come up with here, but he says that only then will we have the peace that we pray for on the planet. The kingdom of God literally will come on earth once enough of us are following those teachings perfectly.
Well, it will come for those who are doing so.
It begins to come. It's important to make this additional statement. There's work being done now on consciousness. We're all one being. We're all connected densely at the level of our minds. And it seems to be that when a certain number of beings, of people, and I think it's a small number, like 10%, I need to look it up, I just haven't had time, but when a fairly small number of us have all made the same leap of consciousness, it's going to begin to elevate all consciousness. ISIS, everybody.
It expands exponentially.
Yes, it does.
Yes. Yes. It does. Yes. Well, that's how energy is, that the energy expands exponentially. I look at it in a very pragmatic way, in that, in a way, when people around me talk about ISIS and how horrible it is, I bring up the idea that perhaps ISIS is unifying us in a way, because wherever ISIS goes, that country wants to unite with other countries to stop ISIS. And so therefore, in a very strange way, when you think about it, it is bringing the country together. And so in that way, you can even say that those people who are in ISIS, they came to do what they came to do in order to create this from their higher consciousness, even though it would be hard to say they are in a higher consciousness now. But they came here to do this so that the world would unite in a way to create peace.
We don't know the plan. Those of us who are one stitch cannot see the tapestry, but you're right. Some of the things that are inexplicable to us because we don't know the plan and we're basically too close. We have our nose pressed right against our stitch. Who knows what great things will come out of what we think are terrible things? It's just impossible to know. One thing I want to know from you, though, is tell me what your understanding of God is. Because in reading your book, what I get is that you think of each of us as God, and you tend to talk to the universe. I think you and I have the same understanding, but I can't tell for sure. What's your understanding of
spirit? I think God is within all of us. We are energy. Energy is God. God is love, and we all have energy within us, so we are all basically love. We are all one. I don't think there's, and that's why I don't think there's one God that's more important than another God. We are all that same energy, and we are all here to be here for what we have to learn. We are all the energy of eternity. And collectively we make the big God. I mean, I don't think there's any God looking down and saying, you must do this, you must do that, this is right, this is wrong. How could a God that was in everyone judge what is right or wrong when this energy would feel that each is on its individual path that it needs to be on?
Yeah, that's fascinating to me, because what you're saying is the same thing I've been telling people, only in totally different words. Do you see, everybody, how when people are doing this work, we all come to the same place, even though we may have started differently? I've come purely from what the afterlife evidence tells us, and that includes quantum physics, because the basics of quantum physics are part of the afterlife evidence. But this is the best definition I've ever seen. The only thing that exists is an energy-like potentiality without size, without form, alive in the way that your mind is alive, conscious, and probably self-aware, highly emotional, and its only emotion is perfect love. That's God. Now, nothing else is real, but our minds are part of God, as you just said, Betsy.
Yes.
So we are real too, but our bodies, what we think around is around us. None of that is real.
No.
And even the afterlife levels, which are just as real to the people there, in fact, they say more real than this level is, those are all mind created too. The only thing that exists in a timeless now is all of us as part of this amazing entity that is God.
Yes, I put it this way. Anything that could be here today and gone tomorrow is illusion. That includes our bodies. Anything that we have with us into eternity is our emotion, and that is real.
Yes. Yeah, and the further insight, which I think I see in your book as well, is that we already are infinitely perfect. We are already part of the Godhead. The trouble is that we have the illusion that we're not, and we have the illusion we have all of these failings. So what Jesus and what Betsy, what all of the people working on this, TJ, what everyone is doing is calling us to remember that we are part of the infinitely loving, infinitely perfect Godhead or Source. You can call it the universe, but the universe is material. And so I try to get people not to think that way, but to think of Source, mind with a capital M, which is what Max Planck called it, or you can call it God, as long as God doesn't, the term God doesn't put into your head the Christian God with the beard judging us. If that's what the word does for you, you don't use it. You just say Source or mind.
Well, even the universe is an essence, and it is an essence. And we're an essence, and we're all part of that same essence. And so the universe responds to us through our essence. The universe doesn't have ears with which to hear. It simply has an essence in which it can feel our essence. And I talk about that idea in terms of action-reaction and the physics of how the world runs, because and the idea that whatever we put out towards other people is going to come back to us, because the universe interprets that as our expression of love, because the universe thinks everything is love. So
I thought that was one of the most interesting and useful things that you did, was that you repeatedly made people face the fact that whatever they were creating in their own lives, they were basically putting out and asking to receive. Now, if what you're creating is not what you want, you better change what you're creating, because as you say, basically you're calling for that to happen.
Yes.
To you. Whatever negativity you create, you're calling for more of it for yourself.
Because you're telling the universe this is your expression of love, and the universe says, oh, wonderful. So if I'm expressing disrespect towards somebody, the universe says, oh, Betsy thinks disrespect is love, so let's give her lots more of that back.
Yeah, it's really quite... it's fascinating
how
the same thing comes to us from different directions.
Yeah, we make things more complicated than they are, to truthfully tell you, Roberta. I think the ego within us makes things much more complicated.
It does.
It's really much simpler than people think it is.
I'm just going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask Betsy, where did all this wisdom come from? Meanwhile, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Flying High in Spirit, and now it turns out, also My Thomas. I always thought it was a novel. Go figure. You can learn about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest today is a fascinating woman. Betsy Otter Thompson had a stellar career, but she is psychic, and she has ended up where it came from in a minute. But she's ended up writing a book called Love Human, which doesn't use the teachings of Jesus, but helps you get to the same place, just like T.J. Woodward's Wonderful Conscious Being. So this is another book that might resonate especially with you. Now, tell us how this happened. How did you write this book?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it's Jesus. I'm not going to say it's not Jesus, because I am strongly in favor of the idea that all material should be judged on the nature of the material and not the name attached to it.
I agree. What you're saying is you channeled it, and you don't want to talk about from whom, but it came to you. It was not something that you did research and then wrote, right?
No, that's true. It's something that came through me. I did no research. But the funny thing is that when the first book that I had published by a publisher was Hampton Roads, which was the mirror theory. And the publisher said, well, yes, we're interested, but we have to have some research. So after I had written the book, I went back and I did the research.
Yes.
And so I did the research after the book was written, and that was one of the bigger miracles in my life, because the research backed up everything that was in the book. So that was like an amazing thing to me, and gave me incredible faith in what I was hearing, in that historically everything that I had shared there was something to back it up.
All right, so this book... Did it come in little pieces over many years, or did it come all at once? How did it come to you?
I didn't even know what the title would be before I began. I didn't know what the chapter headings would be. I didn't know what the book was going to be about. I just sat down and said, I'm ready to begin.
Okay.
I had no idea. I really didn't. That's how all my work is done. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's what happens for me. There it is. I just, I say, I'm ready to be the vehicle, so let's go.
What I think the insight I would add to that is that even people who think they're doing it all themselves, and I'm Exhibit A for that, I just thought I have spent my life doing research. I've worked very hard. I'm really, 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 really smart. And I did it all myself. I'm coming to understand that I've done absolutely none of it alone. And I think that may be true of most of us, if not all of us. For example, the fiction that I write, which I love writing, they have just told me, you know, you love writing fiction, so here are your three fiction guides. I don't really write it myself. My Thomas came very easily. And after it was over, I thought, hey, I'm so smart. I'm going to be able to do this again. I tried to do it with the Winslow family, could not write a full sentence. And that being the case, I've come to understand None of this was my work alone. And that's good, actually, because when you call on spirit, as you have, Betsy, and I guess as I have, you can do work which is much more important than just the one little thing that you might do for yourself. You have the chance to do something that is really going to help the world. So I accept it, although it took me a little while to accept it. I accept that I'm basically probably an idiot, but there are beings who have been able to use me, have found me useful. I don't know how you see your role, but do you don't feel you have an active role in this either, right?
Well, I have an active role, yes. The material couldn't be what it is if it weren't for me, and the material couldn't be what it is without spirit. So we're definitely co-creators.
Co-creators, I like that.
Yeah, we're co-creators. And I have this vision of before we get here, what spirit's doing when it's out of body. And I have a feeling it's the same thing that we do when we're in body. It's looking for ways to be useful. It's looking for ways to share love. It's looking for ways to share its heart. And so spirit that has interested in mystery novels is helping mystery novels. Maybe they want to come back and be a mystery novel. So they're learning the craft partly while they're not here.
I think that's a good insight. That's probably true.
Yeah. And so, spirit, I mean, think of all the different ways we have expressing love in the world today. Why wouldn't there be that many and more, many more out of form, out of body? I don't think it's that different. I've heard over and over again, the message is the only difference between being here and there is the body you have,
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, which as we get older, Betsy, begins to be more of an inconvenience than anything, but that's all right.
You gotta love it, Roberta.
So if you were going to, I really enjoyed your book. I didn't 100% resonate with every bit of it because I'm coming from a slightly different direction. But where you've arrived is the same place that one arrives when one uses the gospel teaching. So I'm there. As with T.J. Woodward, I think yours is a wonderful book for people who may, for whatever reason, not resonate with the gospels. I think they'll resonate with your book. It's hard to categorize because it's not really New Age. It's really entirely spiritual, as far as I can see. It's a. What would you say? How would you categorize your book?
It's for anybody who wants to know themselves better. I think it's about understanding the journey and what it's all about. It's about letting go of our beliefs of what the journey is supposed to be and just let it be, stopping, not thinking anymore that we have to be perfect, but thinking we're perfectly wonderful just the way we are. Because energy, thought beings are like energy, and whatever you give in your thought beings, whatever thought beings you have, they're going to expand and they're going to go out and connect with other thought beings that are similar. So if you're constantly focused on you're not good enough, you're going to connect with all kinds of people who aren't feel the same way that they are.
Right. Oh, that is so profound and
true. So you've got to remember your energy beam that you have in your thoughts is just like a radio beam in that it tunes into other frequencies that are the same. And so therefore, everyone who's tuned into a radio station that they like jazz music, then you're tuned in with everyone else on that frequency. If you're on a news program where the newscaster is talking about everything that is wrong with the world, you're tuned in on the same frequency with everyone else tuned in on that station. And so you have to ask yourself, be responsible for the thought beams you put out there and the thought beams you want to hold, because that's what you're attracting back.
What helped me to get control of my thoughts was when I first understood, and this was maybe 20 years ago, that there's no such thing as a private thought. Our consciousnesses are so tightly together, and not just, we're not like pixels, so each of us is separate when we make up God. We are inextricably part of God. It's an energy. We are part of that whole, and we really have never left it. We think we're here, but that's, as you say, Betsy, part of the illusion. So what I tell people is, from now on, you just never have a thought that you would mind, as I say in The Fun of Dying, that you would mind seeing plastered on a billboard in Times Square as a thought bubble over your face. Never again have a thought. There are no private thoughts, so you never again have a thought you would want to make private. And I have found when you make that change, you really can clean up your thoughts. I just don't even ever have thoughts that I don't want to share with the world. In fact, I probably share too much at this point. But,
well,
but
I,
you're
I
right.
have to confess I do have thoughts sometimes that I don't want to share with others. But I think if you don't put any action behind it, you're okay. It's the action thought that creates. In other words, if you just have a thought, maybe you're connected to other people with the same thought, but it doesn't go anywhere because there's no action behind it. And so it's just, I mean, you know, sometimes when I was in the process of years ago, I don't do this much anymore, but when I would get angry, I didn't know what to do with my anger. So I would go into a room and I would throw pillows around and stomp on pillows and scream and yell and curse. And then it got it out of my body and I was fine. And I didn't throw it towards other people. It's only when you throw your anger towards other people that you invite the anger back.
One of the things that thank you for that insight. One of the things then that I would say is if people want to use Love Human, Betsy's book, as a springboard to get started, I think that's a wonderful thing to do. I think in it, there is a tremendous amount of wisdom. I wish, as I read it, I knew more and more. It had to have been channeled. But what the teachings of Jesus do is to help us to permanently vanquish those negative feelings. So maybe after reading Love Human, read Liberating Jesus and get started on the teachings. Or T.J. Woodward as well. But what we're seeing is this gathering of wisdom. Ultimately, there will be no more anger. There'll be no more negative feelings in the world at all because we are perfected beings. These negative thoughts are not natural to us. They are the product of the distorted environment in which we have put ourselves as an opportunity to remember, to learn, to grow, to remember who we are. So it's a process. We're beginning that process now. I'm going to try throughout this year to help everyone who's listening to really get on this road, because I can promise you where it leads is where you want to be. It makes you happy as nothing ever could make you happy. This learning and growing spiritually is the best thrill there is. So that's where we're going. But when you think about your book, what do you want people to take away from it? What are the most important insights, you think?
I want them to remember they're more powerful than they think they are. That they are the creators of their lives. We are all the creator of our lives by what we put out towards other people. We get exactly what we deserve. So if we think other people deserve love, then the love comes back. If we think other people deserve judgment, then we get the judgment back. We are the creators of our lives. We are powerful, much more powerful than we think we are. And so remember that you are the person who can put your life in one direction or another direction. You are the one who controls it. No one outside of yourself controls your energy, only you.
Very well said. Now, I don't know if you hear from people. I hear from people now all the time. And I love hearing from people. And again, I'll just say, if you don't hear back in 24 hours, send flowers. I'm still keeping to that, even though it means sometimes I don't sleep much. But over and over again, I'll hear from people who are in tremendous pain over some tragedy or disaster or just over a broken marriage or love affair. And my first instinct used to be, what a wonderful thing. Look how the growth is going to come from that for you. But this is not the right answer when people are hurting. So long ago, I learned to tell people that this is a great opportunity to grow that doesn't come without pain. And of course, then you assure people that everything is fine. Your child is fine. Your dog is fine. Or this person that with whom you're having a contentious time now, you and he are going to be great eternal friends. But it really is, don't you think, those sort of wake-up moments in our lives that from which we really can grow the most?
I think that when we, before we come here, Roberta, that we have an agenda that we want to live, that we have challenges that we feel are the right challenges for us in terms of what we, our timely growth. And I believe that I firmly believe that some of that stuff is already set up. How we react to it is not set up.
Yes.
I believe the challenges are set up. That we, you know, I liken it to the idea that when we go on a vacation, we decide where we're going to go. We decide what we're going to take with us, what we're going to do when we get there, who we're going to meet when we get there, and when we're going to leave. And I can't believe we would be any less careless about when we come here for a journey in humanness. So I yes, think we plan.
We do.
What we need to, we know what we need to understand. We know what we didn't understand in a past lifetime. We know where that the growth is trying me. So we set up the challenges ourselves that we believe are going to give us that growth. And so it's just a matter of realizing that the pain is just a path to the growth we're seeking. And when you look at it that way, it brings you confidence in your journey instead of feeling disillusioned and left out and sad and awful. It gives you the opinion that my soul is wise enough to know what it is I need to go through, because the alternative is to say your soul's a dummy, and that's impossible.
No, it's not a dummy. Most of our of what we think of as our mind is not even accessible to us when we're in bodies. We are infinitely more. And people, after they die, very quickly come back into what Mikey Morgan calls that suitcase that they packed and left there. And suddenly they feel really, really smart and really full of insights that they didn't have before. So, and you're so right, we come in with a plan. Planning each Earth lifetime with our guides and with all the people who will be important in that lifetime and their guides is a very important part of getting ready to come into a lifetime.
Yeah.
People will say, you know, I never would have planned this. I never would have planned that. But what we feel so different when we're there. An Earth life, when your mind is eternal, which our minds are, an Earth life feels like a minute. It's like a bad day and bad afternoon in the gym. I'm going to plan to really build those spiritual muscles with the biggest, meanest machines. So yes, I want all my children to die in a house fire. Of course I want, lose my job and become a quadriplegic, whatever. Great things I can plan in that I can overcome spiritually, because when I come back, I'm going to have grown by miles spiritually. Believe it or not, that's how you think when you're there. There is a council, apparently, I've seen evidence of this, a council that has to approve the toughest life plans, and they often scale them back. People have been too ambitious about what they thought they could tackle. And, you know, obviously, if you have too hard a life here, it can break you. It can end up causing negativity rather than positivity in your spiritual growth. But you're so right. And everyone, do you see how Betsy, not having done any of this research, but having simply channeled and then read what she channeled and had other insights like that, she came essentially to the same place where I've come after 50 years of doing this research. So it's all one truth. There is no multiple truth. There's no separate religion. There's nothing. There is one truth, which is why I call these podcasts Seek Reality, because there's one reality.
And I also think that before we come here, that we all agree upon the friends we're going to find and people
yes,
we're going to meet. And so therefore, the two of us knew that we would eventually meet as we have met. And those unions, the people we wanted to find, you know, I wanted to find you, you wanted to find me. And so therefore, and for the length of time that we know each other, that's also how we wanted it to be. So when people say, a child came and was born and only lasted 3 months, well, what if the soul came for the 3 months and that was its goal? And what if everyone else agreed upon that before they came here?
Yes.
It just puts a different perspective on looking at your life from the angle of, okay, this is about what I can learn from what I live, instead of woe is me for all that I have been through. Because I know what that brings, and that brings you almost homeless.
Yes, well, it's good to try these things, Betsy. Not necessarily what you want to live with, but it's good to try them.
Yeah, I mean, I spent the first half of my life blaming everyone else for all my problems. And you know
yes,
what happened? It only created a lot of people who came into my life and blamed me for their problems.
Yes.
And when I took responsibility for the fact that I had made those choices, nobody else had made them. When I took responsibility for the fact that I had made those choices, my whole life turned around, because then I attracted people into my life who were also taking responsibility.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I should just say, because you mentioned babies dying, that there's overwhelming evidence that when anyone's self-adult dies, it's not an accident, even if it seems to be, but it's a planned event. Just as it was when Mikey Morgan died at 20. That was his last planned exit point. People who die, especially in infancy and very young childhood, are typically very advanced beings. They didn't need to learn things. So their death, their having come, lived briefly, and then dying is really a gift to those who will learn and grow spiritually from the experience of having loved them.
Yes,
that's what we're told.
I love how you put that, because that's exactly what I believe too.
But notice, not all gifts are fun to receive, but they're gifts just the same.
Right, exactly.
So what else do you think it's important people understand? The insights you're giving are wonderful. And as I say, I think your little book is wonderful too, because it differently expresses all the same truths that I'm coming to understand, having come at them the hard way with an entire lifetime of study.
Well, I have a chapter on health, and I do believe that we're all reflective energy. Our bodies are reflective energy, and they're reflecting what's going on in the mind. And so if we have diseased thoughts in our mind, then the body reflects that disease within itself. To actually help us, the body is a gift to us in this journey that we have taken for the help it will give us. And it shows us 24/7 what's going on in our mind. And so if we have I believe that that's why we can heal ourselves, and I have gone through a self-healing, and so I know that it works, that once you understand what the thought in your mind is that's causing the disease in the body, and you release that thought or find the positive in it, then the body has no reason to have the disease in it anymore.
Beautifully said. We know enough about energy healing to know that that is wisdom. Because energy healing, and I know so little about, this is one of the areas I didn't want to study. There have been so many, but I'm coming more and more to think that I'm going to start meeting some energy healers and trying to understand what they do, because it works. If something works and is based in this energy, which is the only thing that is, this energy-like potentiality that really is God, if that works, then for heaven's sake, let's all learn more about it. Let's not decide it's too woo-woo. There's nothing woo-woo anymore. The problem is that things have been disparaged, unfortunately, by the very people who are even now trying to keep us from knowing the truth. And those are people who are stuck in materiality and can't bear for nothing to be real. And so they support science. They support old-fashioned religions based in fear. They support things that are not helping them even. But we're gently, I think, coming to awaken them one by one to the greater possibility that is their lives. And I think in doing that, we're helping this process of advancing peace in the world.
Well, I don't think you have to go to an energy healer. I just think you need to go to yourself, because I believe that if you have something going on in your body, that it reflects something going on in your mind. And you know, this wonderful book that Louise Hay has written about Heal Your Body, she gives all the signals that you need for what's going on in your body. And you just, if you have something wrong with, for instance, when I came back from California and was with family again, all my old resentments came up, and I was like festering for a couple of months, and then I realized that I had developed a lump in my back. And so I went to the doctor. She sent me in to have an MRI. She said the lump was there. And I went home that night. The MRI was in the next morning. I went home that night, and I looked up lumps in Louise Hay's book, and it was for resentment and grudges. And
wow.
So then I knew immediately what the problem was. And once you know the problem, you can heal it. And so I went through a long meditation of realizing what did this resentment and how my family's reaction was what I had to deal with, to the choices I had made. And so I said to myself, what have I learned from the choices they have made? How has it helped me? And I realized that the very fact that they reacted the way they did was the motivation I needed to get me to California, which is where everything happened for me. And so therefore I could release it through the growth that I had found. And I had this incredible feeling of heat and light come all the way through my body. And it was the most amazing feeling. And I'm getting goosebumps, because I always do when I talk about it. I went in for the test the next morning, and it was gone.
All right, this is, we're coming near the end of our time, and I want to make sure people can write this down. Louise Hay, Heal Your Body.
Yes.
And you recommend it strongly because you've used it and it works.
Yes.
Okay. I love that. Thank you. That's a great tip. I'm going to be looking it up as soon as we're off our call.
Yes.
I think that I think that we are all coming now to understand wherever we started, I think we're all coming to converge in the same place. And it's a place of enlightenment. It's a place of wisdom. And it's glorious to be here. I'm loving talking with you. I tell people how they can reach you if they want to learn more about you.
Well, they can go to my website, which is BetsyThompson.com, and from there they can see that I have a lot of social media, but the links are all right there on that page. It's BetsyThompson.com, BetsyThompson.com.
Okay. And do you welcome questions, or how do people, if they wanted to reach you, is there a way they could do that?
They can do it through my website. There is a contact icon.
Okay,
yes.
That's wonderful. That's terrific. I'm so sorry that we've come to the end of our time, but this has been fascinating for me. Betsy Otter, and her book is Love Human, and I'll talk more about it in a minute. But as always, I'm going to have to say first, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, and you never will end. And when you fully grasp everything that means in your life, it's going to change it for the better in ways you cannot now even imagine. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, of course, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. Just search for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Flying High in Spirit, and very surprisingly also, My Thomas. You'll find details about all my books and my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week is going to be your host. 2015 was an extraordinary adventure for me, and that adventure continues. Next week, I'm going to tell you the astonishing story of the book that I channeled in 1990, and I have thought for all this time was a novel. It turns out I was not as brilliant as I thought I was. It wasn't a novel at all. And I'm going to tell you the whole story behind My Thomas. You're going to love this. Please join me next week. Now, today we've been talking with Betsy Otter Thompson. Her book, Love Human, is one of several books I'll be talking about here with you and sharing with you to help us all find our own particular ways to open the way forward toward ever more perfect love and forgiveness in our lives, which is where it begins. Once we have progressed to a certain point in that, we'll find we are changing the entire world. The Gospels are the gold standard, but T.J. Woodward's Wonderful Conscious Being and a number of other books will take us to the same place from various other directions. I'm adding Betsy Otter Thompson's beautiful Love Human to that short list of books that I'm recommending might resonate with you. It's a brief book, and it's a to-the-point book. A lot of people nowadays have short attention spans. If that's you, try Love Human. Once you begin to awaken to who you truly are, you're going to find that all of these books will resonate with you, but it may be that right now one of them will especially speak to you. My dear, beautiful friends, please never forget that none of this is new to us. We are already perfected beings. We've just forgotten that. And the beginning of genuine peace and joy in each of our lives and in all the world is the moment when each of us begins to reawaken to the perfection that we already are. For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.